Thank you very much, Rabbi Brand, for asking me to speak. So I'm assuming many of you are familiar with the events alluded to in this very long title. But for those of you who are not familiar with the events, or perhaps unfamiliar with the title, I'll just briefly sketch what we're referring to here. I think a month and a half ago, 2 months ago, the administration put forward a proposal or a plan, or a they were going to implement the following item on their agenda, which is to ensure that all employers, with few exceptions, would be required to provide for their employees health insurance, which would cover contraceptives. Okay, this is supposed to have tremendous medical benefits, and was supposed to provide access to these things to those who might otherwise not be able to receive them. There was one exception made for institutions whose predominant focus religious activities, and most of their employees, say, are members of a certain faith group, but no exception was made for institutions, even if those institutions are affiliated with some religious organization, whose employee base is broader than just one faith group. So, for example, Catholic hospitals, Catholic universities, like the University of Notre Dame, for example, would receive no exemption from this. They, too, would have to provide for all their employees health insurance, which would cover contraceptives. And this created a very strong backlash coming from different quarters. Primarily, it came from the Catholic Church and other related Christian organizations who objected that this would violate their freedom of conscience, since they, at least the upper echelons of the Catholic Church, don't believe that contraceptives are morally permitted, and they would be required, in a sense, to fund the use of something that they find morally objectionable. Okay, and then this erupted, then a plan was devised to defuse this. So, it was supposed to be that instead of them having to fund it, they would just have to provide the insurance without having to cover it. But we're going to focus on the original plan, the plan which included funding on the part of the employer. And we're going to avoid all issues of politics, constitutionality, and the like. We're just going to focus on halacha. Okay, the question essentially that I want to discuss is, what would halacha say about a situation that's analogous? Okay, we're not going to deal with this very situation, since the attitude of the Catholic Church towards contraceptives is slightly different, or very different from the one of Orthodox Judaism. But one can easily come up with analogous situations that might arise, and we would wonder, what would halacha say? So, just to take an example, suppose what was on the table was not contraceptives, but providing for abortions at any time during a pregnancy and for any reason. Okay, so suppose that's what was going to be required of all employers, was that they cover insurance, that they provide insurance, which would cover that. Okay, and that would be something that Orthodox Jews would find objectionable. In other words, at least the abortion at any point in pregnancy, you know, let's say a very late abortion, and for no reason, other than convenience, that is something that all poskim would have a problem with. The question that we can discuss, though, halachically, is there a problem in providing the health insurance which would cover that? Okay, is there a halachic issue along the lines of the one that the Catholic Church was suggesting that they have an issue with? That they have an issue with being required to provide insurance for something that they find morally objectionable? Do we find a halachic problem in being required to provide health insurance for something that's halachically objectionable? That's the question. Okay? In order to address this question, it's easier if we simplify things just a bit, and then at the end, we'll reintroduce the complication that I'm going to take out at the beginning. The complication is that we have this middleman, the insurance company. Again, that does create a complication. So let's, for the sake of argument, for the sake of most of the shiur, assume there is no middleman. Okay, assume that what would be required of any employer is that if their employee wants, okay, to have an abortion, they can go to the employer, and the employer would just have to cover it. The employer would have to pay the doctor directly. What would we say then? Okay, that's a simple scenario, at least simpler than the one that we started with. Okay, so in order to address that, we have to look at the sugya, the topic of lifnei iver lo titein michshol. That is the mitzvah in the Torah that most directly addresses this sort of issue, the issue of facilitating a violation of halachic norms or prohibitions. So the verse in Parshat Kedoshim says that you're not allowed to place a stumbling block before a blind person. Okay, it seems to be in the pasuk a very restricted prohibition. You have a literal blind person and a stumbling block, literally a stumbling block. You go ahead and place it before that person. You have violated a prohibition, right? That doesn't seem to happen all that often. Hopefully, people are not going around looking for blind people to trip with stumbling blocks. That would be a fairly easy prohibition to keep, right? Not to violate. But in Chazal, this prohibition is expanded considerably. Okay, so if you look in the Sifra, the Medrash Halacha on Vayikra, we find as follows. The Sifra says, "V'lifnei iver lo titein michshol." Lifnei suma badavar. Okay, that when it says don't put a stumbling block in front of a blind person, it doesn't mean only a blind person who's literally blind. It means someone who's blind with respect to some matter. What does that mean? Here are some examples. Ba v'amar lecha bat ish ploni mahi lekuhuna. Al tomar lo ksheira v'hi eina ela psula. If someone says they want shidduch advice, but it's like halachic shidduch advice, they want to know, is this this woman, is she fit to marry a Kohen? Because there are certain cases in which a woman can marry a Yisrael, but can't marry a Kohen. And this, the man, the prospective groom, wants to know, is this woman really fit to marry a Kohen? Because he apparently is a Kohen. And you know that she's not. Okay, but he has no idea, that's why he's asking you. And you go ahead and tell him that yes, she is. Knowing full well that she is not. Knowing full well that she's psula lekuna. That is an example of a violation of this prohibition of lifnei iver lo titein michshol. Okay, because this person is blind with respect to the question of whether she is or is not fit to marry him. And you have misled him by telling him that he is, that she is. And another example, hayeno tell mimcha etza, al titein lo etza she'ena hogenet lo. In other words, this is much more general. It's not just specifically about violations of isurim, of prohibitions. Any advice someone wants to ask of you, and you're well informed about the issue, but you tell the person something which, to your knowledge, is pretty bad advice, that also is a violation of lifnei iver lo titein michshol, because the person is considered an iver, a blind person with respect to this matter, and you are tripping them up. You're causing them to stumble in virtue of the advice that you're giving them. So you already have a generalization, an expansion of the literal meaning of the pasuk in this sifra. And furthermore, you also have a relation, a clear... you have the Medrash addressing a case in which there's a violation of a prohibition that's pursuant to your actions. Okay, in this case, the person presumably ends up violating the prohibition of marrying a woman whom he's not supposed to marry in virtue of what you've told him. But we should note that at least in the Sifra, at least in this source, we seem to be talking about a case in which the person who's going to be violating the prohibition is totally in the dark. Right? They're what we would call a shogeg. They're going to be violating this prohibition unintentionally. And furthermore, the way in which you're violating this prohibition of lifnei iver lo titein michshol, you, the assistant, rather than the principal violator, is by misleading them. Okay, so if all we had was the sifra, you would broaden the prohibition beyond the literal meaning of the pasuk, of the verse, but you still might restrict it to cases in which there is misleading going on, misleading information. Okay, but now when we turn to the central source for this topic of lifnei iver lo titein michshol in the Talmud Bavli, we get a different impression. Here it's broadened even further. So if you look at the next source, the context here is the Mishnah in the beginning of Avodah Zarah tells us that you're not allowed to do business with idolaters several days before their religious holidays. Okay, and now the Gemara turns to the question of what is the rationale for that halacha in the Mishnah? Ibai lehu, mishum harvacha, odilma mishum v'lifnei iver lo titein michshol. Is this halacha, that you're not allowed to do business with them, because of harvacha, because they're going to, let's say, profit in this business venture, and then in virtue of this profit that they made, they're going to be so happy, so overjoyed, that they're going to thank their god or gods on their religious holiday. Okay, and apparently this wears off after a few days, so it's not so bad. You know, it's totally permitted if you do it 4 days in advance, because then they'll forget about it, they won't say thank you, they won't give any gratitude when it comes to the religious holiday. But right close to the holiday, one has to be careful about that. That's one possibility. Or, the Gemara suggests, it's based on this verse, the verse that we started with, Lifnei Iver Lo Titein Michshol, because you're selling them, suppose, goods that can be used to actually offer sacrifices or perform some other religious ritual. Say you sell them an animal. They can then take that animal and use it to sacrifice. Okay? That would be a violation, according to this side of the dilemma, this horn of dilemma, of the prohibition of not putting a stumbling block before a blind person. Because you are facilitating their violation of a prohibition. After all, even though they're idolaters, they might not be Jewish, they are also prohibited from worshiping other gods. That's one of the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach, one of the Noahide laws. So you would be facilitating a prohibition. That's the Gemara's question. Which of these explains it? L'mai nafkamino, what does it make a difference? Which one of these is the rationale? To which the Gemara replies, de isle behema lidide. The difference emerges in a case in which the person you're doing business with already has an animal. You suppose they already own an animal, and you sell them another animal. And maybe there's even good reason, very good reason, to believe that they're going to use the animal that you sold them. Still, the Gemara assumes that iam rat mishum harvacha hakamar vichlei. Right? If it's because of the first reason that we suggest, that they're going to be so happy about how this business deal went, it doesn't make a difference how many animals they have already. Okay? They're still going to give gratitude for the profit that they have emerged with, assuming that it was a good deal for them. So it doesn't really matter what their situation is prior to your doing business with them. But i'amrat mishum iver lo titein michshol ha'itlei l'didei. The Gemara just assumes that this prohibition of lifnei iver lo titein michshol, of not putting a stumbling block before a blind person, which does cover, according to the Gemara, a case in which you facilitate or assist someone violating a prohibition, only applies if that person does not already have access to that which you're providing them. Okay, they don't have their own animal which they could use to sacrifice. If they already do, then you wouldn't violate this prohibition of lifnei iver lo titein michshol. But the Gemara challenges that. V'chi itle lo avar mishum iver lo titein michshol. Is that really true that if they already have the animal, then you, the person selling the animal, don't violate lifnei iver lo titein michshol? The Hatanya, Amar Rabbi Natan, minayin shelo yoshit adam kosh shel yayin lenazir ve'evir menachai lifnei noach. Okay, we have a braita which says that according to Rabbi Natan, a person is not allowed to hand a cup of wine to a nazir, a Nazirite who's not allowed to drink wine, or a limb torn from a live animal, that's Eivar Min Achai, and it's prohibited even to a non-Jew. You can't hand that even to a non-Jew because of this pasuk of Lifnei Ve'elo Titein Michshol. V'ahacha d'chilo yahavina le'shak li'iyu. But here in this braita, it seems that if you weren't to give him the cup of wine or the Eiver Min HaChai, the person would just take it himself. So we seem to have refuted that restriction or limitation on the prohibition of Lifnei Iver Lo Titein Michshol. It seems that from this braita, it doesn't matter. Even if they could have done it on their own, you still would violate the prohibition. To which the Gemara replies, Hacha b'mayaskinan dekai betray ibrei nahara. Okay? No, we have to assume that the braita is talking about a case in which the nazir, or the Gentile, was on another side of the river, the other bank of the river, and they couldn't access this item which you are handing to them. And the Gemara thinks there's a good proof for this reading of the Braisa from the language of the Braisa, because it says, Dekanami diktani lo yoshit lo ktani lo yitain shmamina. Right? Because it uses this language which is, I guess, uncharacteristic of lo yoshit. Okay? You should not hold out, rather than just say, don't give. And the Gemara assumes that the meaning of lo yoshit is don't hand them something that they would not otherwise be able to access. Okay, now this is the main source, as I said, for the issue of facilitating prohibitions in halacha. And at least three important things, emerge from this source, even before we go on. One thing is that, unlike the sifra that we saw, it's clear from the context here that even if the person whom you are supplying the prohibition with is going to violate the prohibition b'mezid, they're going to violate this prohibition intentionally. It's not as though you're misleading them. It's not as though they don't know that this is something that might be problematic from a halachic perspective. Even in such a case, it seems fairly clear you would violate the isser of lifnei iver lo titein michshol, right? Because the Mishnah that we're talking about is selling to an idolater who knows full well that he's worshiping whatever gods he's worshiping, and presumably even if we would tell him, oh no, you know, halacha says that you ought not do that, that really wouldn't sway the idolater. Okay, so in halacha, he would be considered a mezid. He's well informed, and there's no misleading going on. So that's one very, very important point which emerges, that as opposed to the Sifra, we have a further expansion here. A second important point is that this clearly applies even if the person you're causing to violate a prohibition or helping to violate a prohibition is not Jewish. That's the example that Rabbi Natan gives of giving Eiver Min HaChai to a Gentile. That's going to be very important for the purposes of halacha, especially when we think about our scenario that we started with. Most of the people you are going to have to provide, say, the abortion with, are going to be not Jewish. And yet they are also prohibited from having abortions. In fact, the punishment is even greater when it comes to a non-Jew. So from this Gemara, it would emerge that if there's no other reason to permit the case we started with, you're certainly not going to be able to permit it because the other person is not Jewish. Lifnei Iver applies even if the principal violator is himself or herself not a Jew. Okay, and the third point that emerges is what the Gemara explicitly says, that there seems to be this distinction between Trei Ibrei Denara and Chad Ibrei Denahara, two sides of the river and one side of the river, which there is room for debate about how exactly to define or draw the line on a theoretical level, on a more conceptual level, between two sides of the river and one side of the river. But roughly, what the poskim say is that it means that but for your action, they couldn't have violated this prohibition. And given what you've done, they now would violate it. It's very likely that they would, or according to some, as long as there's even a safek, a doubt that they might do it because you've given them this item, you've now violated the prohibition. That would be Trei Ibrei Denara, according to most poskim. Otherwise, it would be Chad Ibrei Denahara. So the otherwise comes into play most often if the first condition is not met. If it's not true that they couldn't have violated this but for your giving it to them. like the Gemara says, if they have some other way of doing it, they have their own animal, or let's say even they could purchase their own animal from a non-Jew. That is pretty uncontroversially, according to most poskim, a case of chad ibra dinara. Right? They can get away with this. They can they can perform this prohibition without you, and even without any other Jew. Okay, that would be a clear case of chad ibra dinara. And there's supposed to be this very important distinction, the Gemara says, between the two. If there's if it's trei ibra dinara, then there's a violation of lifnei iver lo titein michshol. If it's chad ibra dinara, there's no violation. Now, what is the halacha in chad ibra dinara? Because the Gemara is not the end of the story here. So if you turn to the next page, you'll see there are three views in the Rishonim, okay, about this issue. So if you look in the Rambam, which you don't have in your sheets because the proof from the Rambam is an omission. The Rambam doesn't mention anywhere this distinction between chad ibra dinara and trei ibra dinara, the two sides and the one side of the river. It just doesn't come up, even though he definitely codifies the halacha of lifnei iver lo titein michshol. He codifies this rule that you're not allowed to facilitate someone's violation of a prohibition. He doesn't mention this distinction anywhere, which led many achronim, many later commentaries on the Rambam and poskim, to suggest the Rambam simply did not accept this distinction. That the Rambam was of the opinion that even chad ibra dinara, even if the principal violator, had some way of violating this on his own, you would still be in violation of the prohibition midoraita of lifnei iver lo titein michshol. Okay, this is I have here the Melamed Lehoel of David Zvi Hoffman, who quotes his colleague and friend Maram Horovitz, the Av Beis Din of Frankfurt am Main, who he says proved that according to the Rambam, Lifnei Iver applies equally in a case of Chad Ibra Dinahara. So that's one opinion, the most stringent opinion. The next in line is the Ran in his commentary on the Rif, the Rabbeinu Nissim, and he was also preceded in this view by others. But he says it quite clearly. He says that, yes, there's no prohibition midoraisa in chad ibra dinara. The Gemara says there's this distinction. So, we have to accept there's this distinction as opposed to the Rambam, who apparently thought that this was an answer the Gemara gave, but didn't really accept it lahalacha. The Ran says, no, this is accepted lahalacha. The Gemara viewed this as halachically binding, and therefore in a case of chad ibra dinara, there is no violation of lifnei iver lo titein michshol. But that's just talking about the biblical level. Okay, there's a midoraisa prohibition of lifnei iver lo titein michshol, and that doesn't apply if the principal violator could have accessed the prohibited item in any case. But the Ran says you are not off the hook. Okay, it's not permissible because there's still an Isser D'Rabbanan. There's still a rabbinic prohibition to assist a violator of halacha, even in a case of chad ibra dinahara, even in the case in which the person has access. And here I'll read inside in the second line of the Ran of Amikomakom Midrabbanan Miha Asur, Share Mechuyav Hula Hafrisho Miyasur, Veheach Yisayei De Ovre Avera. The Ran says we have a principle that at least when it comes to a minor, you're supposed to be separating people from doing averos. If you see a minor, certainly if you're a Beis Din or if you're a parent, and you see a minor engaged in some prohibition and they're of an age and, at which they should start knowing about these things, then you're supposed to try to stop them. So the Ran says, all the more so, you shouldn't assist people in violating any prohibitions. But that whole halacha is only midrabanan, the Ran says. So the resulting halacha from the Kal Vachomer, which he makes, right, not to assist people, even if they could have done it without your help, that too is only midrabanan. But there still is an isser. Okay, that's pretty important because if there is a prohibition involved, even in a case in which the person could have done it, the principal violator could have done it anyway, then that would have significant ramifications, right? It would limit how much you could really allow. Because from the Gemara, the impression you might get is just once the person could have done it anyway, you're off the hook. You don't have to worry about facilitating any prohibitions. But according to the Ran, and certainly according to the Rambam, but even according to the Ran, you do have to worry. It's just you only have to worry midrabanan. Okay, the concern here is a din derabanan. The final shita and the Rishon, the final opinion that we have, is that which takes the Gemara at face value. Either Mordechai and some say Tosfos also, they say there just isn't any prohibition in a case of Chadib or the Nahara. In a case in which the person could not access this but for your giving it to them, yes, that would be a violation. But otherwise, if they have some way of getting it, even if they need to purchase it from someone else, as long as it's they have access to someone, let's say, not Jewish, who would sell them this item, there's no violation at all. You don't have to be concerned. The case he discusses is giving a loan to an idolater who you know is going to use that money to give alms or perhaps something else more problematic, I suppose, on their religious holiday. He says you don't have to be concerned about that. You can give them the loan because usually they don't give very much, and so however much they're going to give, they could have found, you know, come up with without you giving them the loan. Okay, if they were to give huge sums of money, you know, all the money they had, then perhaps this would be problematic. But otherwise, it's not problematic because they could have done this without your assistance at all. Okay, those are the three opinions. Now, how do we paskin? So the Shulchan Aruch doesn't address this, but the Ramah of Moshe Israelitz in his glosses on the Shulchan Aruch, which you have here in the middle of the page, and it's the Rashi script. Okay. Halfway down, it says with three lines into the Ramah, Yesh omrim ha da'asru limkor lehem dvarim ha-shayachim la'avodah, sahainu dafkeim ein lehem acherim kayotze bo. Osher lo yuchlu liknos b'makom acher. Aval im yicholim liknos b'makom acher, mutar limkor lehem kol davar. Right, so he first quotes the Mordechai, we just saw, which says that all of this, the whole discussion in the Shulchan Aruch of selling substances which could be used for idolatry and the problems involved because of the prohibition of Lifnei Iver Lo Titen Michshol, that doesn't apply if they have other substances like them, or they could purchase them elsewhere. Okay? Because that's just the case of Chad Ibra Dinara, which the Gemara tells us is no problem. It's permitted according to the Mordechai, and one does not have to be concerned. But he says v'yesh machmirin. But there are those who are machmir. Presumably, he's referring to the Ran, maybe the Rambam, but most likely he's referring to the Ran, who holds that at least there is a prohibition midrabanan to do this here. Okay, so he says there are those who are machmir. There are those who wouldn't do this, who would say that this is prohibited, because they think that although there is no Isser D'oraita, there's no prohibition on the scriptural level, there is a prohibition midarabanan. The Nagul Hakel Kesvar Arishona, the custom is to be lenient like the first opinion. The Chol Baal Nefesh Yachmir La'atzmo. But anyone who, you know, is especially scrupulous about halacha should be machmir, should be stringent here. Okay, so on the one hand, he tells us that there's this dispute. He also tells us that the custom is to be lenient, but he tells you that if you are going to be careful about halachic issues, then you really should be stringent here. Okay, so further on, there is a machlokes, exactly the way I presented it. The Ran and the Mordechai are in disagreement. But the Shach tells us something very interesting. The Shach is on the left side of the page. He first recapitulates the Ramah, explains what the Ramah holds, and then he tells us that he doesn't understand the Ran and the Mordechai, the relationship between them, in the same way the Ramah does, or in the same way that I presented things to begin with. He thinks that everyone's in agreement, maybe with the exception of the Rambam, he doesn't address that, but the Ran and the Mordechai are not arguing according to the Shach. Here's what he says. Right, so first he explains the first opinion, that basically it's based on the Gemara, which says that there's an exception if it's Chad Ibra Dinara. Okay, but there are those, like the Ran, who hold that there's an Isser D'Rabbanan, even if it's only Chad Ibra Dinara, even if the person could access the prohibition on their own. V'chol zeh l'das harav. Okay, all of this, he just said, is according to the Rav, that's Rav Moshe Israelitz, the Ramah. Avalafi anios daidi delo pligi. He thinks there's no argument. Tekuli amu modim la Mordechai v'tosvos perakama da'avodas kochavim. Diba oved kochavim o mumar shari. Okay, he says, the Mordechai, and Tosfos also, who I said seems to hold like the Mordechai in one place, when they say it's completely permitted in a case of Chad Ibra Denara, in a case where someone, the violator of the prohibition, could access the prohibition on their own, that was talking about a case in which the principal violator is not Jewish or is an apostate. There is no din derabanan, there's no halacha midrabanan in force, okay, which requires of you or prohibits you to provide them any assistance in violating prohibitions. It only applies to a non-apostate Jew. That's where the halacha midrabanan applies. So the Mordechai and Tosfos, who were talking about dealing with non-Jews, like we said, we quoted the case of the Mordechai, they were willing to allow it because that was, when you were assisting a non-Jewish violator. But, he says, the Ran and Tosfos elsewhere and the Rush, they're talking about assisting Jewish violators, Jewish non-apostate violators. Okay, and when it comes to them, everyone's in agreement, the Shach says. Even the Mordechai is in agreement that there would be a prohibition, midrabanan. Okay, so as opposed to the Ramah, who thinks that there's this dispute, and then the custom is one way, but one who should be scrupulous in the other direction, the Shach thinks that we can make Shalom al Yisrael. There is no dispute here between the Ran and the Mordechai. We just have to distinguish between different cases. Okay, so the bottom line, according to the Shach, is that if it's Trei Ibri Denara, if it's something that the potential violator couldn't get on their own, then you're in violation regardless. Doesn't make a difference if the person is Jew or Gentile, apostate or non-apostate. As we noted, the Gemara is quite clear. Lifnei Iver applies even if the violator is going to be a non-Jew. But if it's Chad Ibra Denara, if it's a case in which the person you're supplying this with already has access to it or could easily obtain access, then there is a prohibition midrabanan, but it's restricted to a case in which that violator is Jewish and not a mumar. Okay, that's the bottom line according to the Shach, and that is accepted by many, many poskim. Okay, at least as a strong reason to be lenient in a case in which it's Chad Ibra Denara, and the violator we're talking about is not Jewish. Okay, now, the Shach is very important. What the Shach says is very important for halacha, but it's also important because it's an interesting window into the basic conceptual issues surrounding Lifnei Iver and the fascinating questions that arise. So I want to just briefly use the Shach to gain a greater understanding of what Lifnei Iver is about, and then we'll come back to the halacha lemaisa, the bottom line halacha about what happens in a case of Chad Ibra Denara. So if you turn to the next page, the Dagul Miravava, the Noda B'Yehuda, Rechezko Landau, on his commentary on Shulchan Aruch, he explains the Shach in a very... He answers a question on the Shach, which many, many Achronim ask, and he answers it quite nicely. The question the Achronim ask is, where did the Shach get this, that an apostate is different? An apostate is a Jew like all other Jews. He still has Kedushas Yisrael, or at least he is a Yisrael, L'chol Davar, Yisrael Afpi Shachata, Yisrael who? Okay, he's still Jewish. So why would the Shach exempt the assister, the person who's going to be assisting an apostate in violating some sort of prohibition? If anything, one would think you should probably try to bring them back into the fold, not to keep on assisting them in violating prohibitions. This is the question that many Achronim ask. And the Dagul Miravava says, instead of reading it inside, I'll just tell you outside, Dagul Miravava says that the Shach doesn't mean Mumar specifically. The Shach means really to include any case in which the violator is doing this bemazed, in which the person you're going to be assisting is intentionally violating some prohibition. So remember, again, when it comes to Lifnei Iver, no such distinction is made. This is, all the posts can point this out. When it comes to the Doraita prohibition of Lifnei Iver, even if the violator is going to be doing this intentionally, you are still not allowed to assist him or her. But, the Dagul Miravava says, what the Shach means to say is that when it comes to the prohibition midrabanan, In a case in which the person could access the prohibition on their own, that is restricted to someone who is doing this bishogeg. Okay, if they're an unintentional violator, but if they're violating some sort of prohibition intentionally, and they could have violated it on their own anyway, then you don't have to worry. Okay, there's no isser at all. So this is now a further expansion of the shach, and also one that is accepted by many later poskim. Okay, so this is important again, halacha lemaisa, and for our scenario, you know, if we think about the scenario we started with, assuming that we're talking about a case of chadei berdinara. Okay, let's assume, which isn't always going to be true, but assume that the person you're going to be assisting in receiving an abortion, or really performing an abortion is the more problematic one, they could do this without you providing any funds. Okay, they could, maybe they would even do it without you providing any funds. So let's assume it's clearly a case of chadei berdinara. If, in addition, we would also classify that person as mazid, that doesn't mean that they think they're violating moral principles. Okay, they may think they're not violating any principles of morality, but we would still consider them a mazid, assuming that they you know, are willing to disregard what we take to be true moral or halachic principles. Okay, so they would be a mazid. Then the shach would say, according to this understanding of the shach, and what many poskim take to be the correct understanding of the shach, that would be permitted. Okay, you would be permitted to assist, even leaving out the middleman, the insurance agency in the middle, because it would be a case of chadei berdinara and a case in which the violator is doing it b'mezid. Okay, it would be doubly permitted if the person violating it is not Jewish, according to the shach. Okay, because the shach says that the iser derabanan of facilitating a prohibition in a case where the person would have access to the prohibition anyway doesn't apply if the person isn't Jewish. Okay, so it would be there would be two reasons to permit if the person is both not Jewish and doing it b'mezid. Now, what is the explanation of this shach? Okay, so far, we've covered some ground in terms of information. What is what does this amount to? Why does the shach think there's this distinction when it comes to the prohibition of midrabanan in the case of chadei berdinara, but not when it comes to trei berdinara? It's not obvious, okay, what the explanation is. So let's explore a little bit what the rationale is for the prohibition of lifnei iver lo titein michshol to begin with. If you look at the Chazon Ish in source 8, and he was preceded in this by others, but he says it quite clearly, the Chazon Ish, who was bothered by the question of how did Chazal know to include in the prohibition of lifnei iver lo titein michshol, even a case in which the person violating the prohibition is not Jewish, and even the case in which the person violating the prohibition is doing it b'mezid, that seems to go against the simple reading of the pasuk. Right? The pasuk is talking about causing someone to stumble, someone who's blind. And as the Sifra said, it has to be someone who's blind with respect to the matter at hand. But if you're talking about someone who's an intentional violator, they don't seem to be blind to anything at all. They just want to they want to perform this prohibition, and you are helping them, but you're not placing a stumbling block before a blind person, even in a non-literal sense. That's what bothered the Chazon Ish. But he said, if we explain the Im Nifaresh, on the third line, Yisuru Shigorim Asiyas Toeva Vitakala Ba'olam Nicha. Right? If we are to explain the sense of the prohibition of lifnei iver, at least as it applies to facilitating isurim, facilitating prohibitions, as a prohibition to bring about things that are abominable, things that are considered violations of God's norms in the world, that's a slip-up, if there is any, more than a slip-up, it's a deep problem in the world. If we're to explain that that's the nature of the prohibition, then we can explain both of these points quite nicely. Right? It matters little who the violator is, if the violator is Jewish or not Jewish, as long as the non-Jew, we're talking about a case in which the non-Jew is violating something that they themselves are not allowed to violate according to the Torah, like Eivor Min HaChai or idolatry, then there is a prohibition being committed in the world that you have facilitated. And similarly, if they're doing this intentionally, it matters little whether they're intentional or unintentional. In fact, it may be even slightly worse if it's intentional, because now you're bringing about a situation, you're contributing to a situation in which a violation of the Ribono Shel Olam's commands has taken place in the world. And that is certainly a state of affairs with very negative valence. Okay, so that would be the problem according to the Chazon Ish. That's the explanation of Lifnei Iver, and that's why it is that it applies in both of these cases. But if you look at the Rambam, I think you get a very different impression as to how he understood Lifnei Iver lo titein michshol, and why it is exactly that even a person who's an intentional violator is still not allowed to be assisted by you. He says, Kol she'asur limkor l'goy, asur l'mochlo l'Yisrael. Shehu listis. The Rambam is talking about engaging in weapons trading. He says, you can't sell weapons to non-Jews. The presumption is they're going to use them for illicit purposes. But he says, don't think it's just non-Jews. Even Jews, if they are the right or the wrong kind, you can't sell to them either. Okay, if a guy who's a known robber, you shouldn't be selling weapons to him. Okay, because you are strengthening the hands of Ovre Avera, of those who are Ovre Avera. V'chein kol ha-machshil iver badavar. Similarly, anyone who causes to stumble a person who is blind with respect to this matter, like he's quoting the Sifra clearly, v'siyu eitzash eina hogenet, right? And you give the person bad advice. Oh, here's the crucial line. She'chizek yidei ovre avera shehu iver v'eino roa derech ha-emes mipnei ta'avat libo hareza over below ta'aseh. Okay, he says, or, you know, parallel case to giving very bad advice would be a case of facilitating someone who's going to violate a prohibition because he is blind, even if he's mazid. The Rambam doesn't say even if he's mazid, but that, we're supposed to understand that because the Rambam's justification is not that we're talking about a guy who doesn't know that the woman he's marrying is psula l'kuhuna. No, we're talking about a guy who's or a woman who is violating this prohibition seemingly with full knowledge. But the Rambam says that even a person who violates b'mezid is still blind. He's morally blind. Maybe he doesn't see the truth. If he saw the truth, and this is the position of the Rambam elsewhere as well, that anyone who violates a prohibition must be mistaken in some way, or ignorant in some way, or they're being clouded, their judgment is being clouded by other factors. Okay, other desires that they have, or external circumstances. It's just clouding what they really know to be true. Okay, but at the moment, it's covered over with this dust. Okay, so they're not really very clear-headed, okay, about the issue. So they are blind. The Rambam thinks that this is no different. The providing assistance to someone who's going to violate a prohibition really is very much analogous to giving bad advice. Giving someone advice who is, in a certain sense, in the dark. Okay, so for the Chazon Ish, we could say, to use classifications that are familiar to us from elsewhere, it seems to be a prohibition. The prohibition of Lifnei Iver lo titein michshol is bein adam lamakom. Right? It's between you and God. You are bringing about more violations of what God wants in this world. Right? He wants X, and you are causing it to be the case that that X does not obtain, that X, whatever the case might be, is being violated. Okay, doesn't seem to be an ethical or interpersonal violation vis-a-vis the person you are tripping up, according to the Chazon Ish. But according to the Rambam, this seems to be more along the lines of an Isser Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, the way that the simple reading of the Pasuk clearly seems to be a Bein Adam L'Chaveiro issue, that it's an interpersonal or ethical violation, obviously with religious basis. But it's between you and the other person. You're causing a harm or a wrong to the other person because this other person is unfortunately in a situation in which they fail to see the truth, the Rambam says, someone who's about to violate a prohibition, and you are assisting them in persisting in this error of theirs, the error of their ways. Okay, so these are very different ways to look at Lifnei Iver and very different ways to justify why it is that if the person violates b'mezid, you still violate lifnei iver lo titein michshol. Now, to give a taste of some of the ramifications of this, of the two approaches, what does it make a difference? L'mai nafkamina, to repeat the Gemara's question. So I brought here three nafkaminas. We're not going to read these inside. I'll just tell you two of them inside. For those who are interested, feel free to read these. The Binyan Sion, Yerv Yaakov Ettlinger, was asked about the following case, which comes up fairly often. Let's say you are of the well-formed opinion that something is entirely permitted. Okay, you think, to take an example, which maybe I shouldn't use because it's too controversial, but let's say you think that heter mechira food is fine. Here in America, this isn't so controversial, so it's fine. Okay, you think heter mechira food is fine. This is a way that's a procedure that's used at the time of Shemitah in Israel to allow certain work to be done on the land and then the produce to be used, which, according to some poskim, is a valid way of doing things. Okay, so suppose you have reached the conclusion that it's fine. Okay, suppose you're not Rav Kook, but someone like Rav Kook, who thinks it really, really, really is okay lechatchila. But you have this friend who thinks it's not. Okay, they only eat badatz in the Shemitah year, and they're going to come to your house for dinner, for Shabbos dinner. Now, they're not going to ask you explicitly, are you only serving me badatz? There's not going to have to be any exchange of information. You're not going to announce at the beginning, I'm serving you only badatz. It's just the meal's going to go on as usual, but you know this about your friend. The question he was asked is, are you allowed to serve heter mechira without him knowing? I mean, you, after all, think there's no problem. You think that no violation of any isser would be committed, midoraisa, midrabanan, minhag, nothing. Okay? Would it be permitted for you to give him this, pass off this food without saying anything, and he would presumably end up eating something that by his own lights is prohibited, but according to you, is completely permitted. Again, he discusses this at some length. It actually was already discussed in the early Rishonim, by the Or HaZeruah. The conclusion he comes to, and the conclusion the Or HaZeruah came to beforehand, is that that's prohibited. Okay, one is not allowed to do that. Not only because it might be gnevat dat, he doesn't discuss that, but he actually thinks that it's a violation of lifnei iver lo titein michshol. Now we can ask ourselves: is that obvious? That's a violation of lifnei iver lo titein michshol. Well, according to the Chazon Ish, I would say it can't be a violation of lifnei iver lo titein michshol. I mean, according to the Chazon Ish, the issue is that you're causing more Isurim to be committed in the world. But you the person who have, are absolutely certain, suppose, that this is completely permissible, this food. It's just you have this friend who has a chumrah. Why should you be concerned with his chumrah? Why can't you pass off the food as kosher? You're not causing any more prohibitions to be violated. Okay, I say that with some hesitation. There, I think, is room to respond here, but I think that would be my natural inclination given the Chazon Ish's explanation. But the Rambam's explanation, I think, easily justifies the conclusion of the Or HaZeruah and the Binyan Sion that one should not do that. It's an ethical wrong to the other person. The other person, by his or her standards, would be very upset if they found out that you were giving them this food. And of course, in this case, maybe you could get away with it, but that doesn't make it right. Okay, so that would be one nafkamina between the Chazon Ish and the Rambam. Another nafkamina, which is raised by the Minchas Chinuch and others, is suppose the prohibition the person is going to be violating is only midrabanan. They're going to be violating some iser that you're facilitating, but it's only going to be a rabbinic violation. If you assist them, are you violating a deoraisa halacha of lifnei iver or a dirabanan one? Everyone seems to assume you violate something or other. But the question is, are you violating the deoraisa prohibition of lifnei iver lo titein michshol? Fascinating question. I think a lot of these questions are fascinating questions to think about. So he brings a machlokes here. Some say, yes, he violates a deoraisa prohibition. Some say, no, he only violates the drabanan prohibition. And the question that those who say he violates the deoraisa prohibition, the question they pose to the other side is, why would this be any worse than giving very bad advice? And you're giving them an Isra Drabanan. So an Isra Drabanan isn't as bad as an Isra Doraisa, but it's still a prohibition of some sort. So That's the question. We'll get to an answer in a second in the Achiezer. But even before you get to the question and the answer, the dispute itself could very easily reflect the question, the dispute of the Chazon Ish and the Rambam. But if you are thinking along the Chazon Ish's terms, then presumably the degree of your violation should reflect the degree of the violation that's going to occur. Right? So if there's going to be a Darabanan infraction that occurs, then your violation of Lifnei Iver will only be Darabanan. You won't have violated anything D'oraisa because you haven't brought about an Isser D'oraisa. Whereas according to the Rambam, yeah, I mean, it seems, why should it make a difference whether the prohibition that's violated is d'oraisa or d'rabbanan? You're still causing a harm to your fellow, which is no better than the harm that you would cause him by giving him bad advice or by actually placing a stumbling block before him if he's blind. So now, what about that question? The question that those who say that you violate an Isser d'oraisa, even in the case in which you're facilitating an Isser d'rabbanan, they ask, wait a second, on the other side, why would you say you only violated an Isser d'rabbanan? How is it any worse or less than giving bad advice? So here we turn to the Achiezer, Rav Chaim Ozer, in source 12, who says as follows: Yesh lahayir beribus d'rabbanan l'mash chakar b'pshut pnei Yehoshua de b'Isser d'rabbanan over mishum lifnei iver midoraisa de lo gara mimesi lo eitza she'en hogenes ve'ich muter ribus d'rabbanan l'vos. Okay, so the basis of his question, the Pnei Yehoshua says, look, it seems like we should have to conclude that someone who facilitates a violator of a prohibition midrabanan would violate a prohibition midoraisa himself, the violator, because it's no better than someone giving bad advice. But he's troubled by this because there are Gemaras which might indicate otherwise. So the Achiezer of Chaim Ozer says he can answer the question as follows: Ulam yesh lomar d'lifnei iver yesh shnei sugim lifnei iver kipshuto. Right, there are two types of lifnei iver. If you put a stumbling block in front of a blind person, oh meisilo etzash eino genetz, or you give advice, right, which is bad advice, it's misleading. Dezeu shayach rak b'shogeg shein ha'iver yodeya. Okay, that only applies if the person is mistaken, if the person is violating something unintentionally. So that you have one type of lifnei iver, but he says v'yesh od sug lifnei iver b'yisurim kamo moshi lo kos yayin l'nazir d'bezeg gam b'mezid over lifnei iver. Okay, there's the other kind, which we said you can violate even if the person who the principal violator is doing it b'mezid. That is the kind of giving someone a prohibition, a prohibited item, facilitating the violation of a prohibition. He says, when it comes to that kind, right, the person who's doing this bimezid, there, it does matter whether the prohibition they're violating is d'oraisa or d'rabanan. You can't say, why is this any better than, as the Pnei Yehoshua says, someone who's tripping someone else up. The situation of providing an Isser d'rabbanan, the Pnei Yehoshua and others say, should be no more lenient. Right? No, we shouldn't be any more lenient about that case than someone who gives bad advice. But the Achiezer says, no, you're confusing two types of lifnei iver. The case in which you mislead someone, okay, the case in which you trip someone up, there, the person is a shogeg, you violate it no matter what they ended up doing, as long as it's considered a tripping up, right? So if they violate a prohibition as a result, even if it's d'rabbanan, yes, you'd violate it. But if the person, the violator, the principal violator himself, is doing this b'mezid, then what you do corresponds, the gravity of what you do corresponds to the gravity of what they do. So if they violate an Isser d'oraisa, you violate an Isser d'oraisa. If they violate an Isser d'rabbanan, you violate an Isser d'rabbanan. What's the logic? The logic is very straightforward. The Achiezer is saying that when it comes to a shogeg, there we can talk about this interpersonal violation, because you're causing some harm to the other person. But when it comes to a mezid, contrary to what the Rambam suggests, there is no room for that interpersonal violation, the ethical violation, because that person has taken the responsibility on him or herself by doing this b'mezid. You're not wronging them. The only thing what we have to contend with in a case of mezid is the wrong you've committed klapei shmaya, right? The wrong that you've brought about more prohibitions and violations in this world. But that sort of issue, it depends how wrong the prohibition is. If it's d'oraisa, then you've done something d'oraisa wrong. If it's d'rabanan, then you've done something d'rabanan wrong. So we're going to wrap up now in 1 minute. So to bring this back to the shach, what's the explanation of the shach? I think it's a combination of what we just said in the Achiezer, together with something that we may have alluded to when speaking about the Rambam, which is that the difference between Chad Ibra Denara and Trey Ibra Denara might also be along the lines of this difference between the Chazon Ish and the Rambam. Because in a case of Trey Ibra Denara, there it makes sense to say that you've caused more prohibitions in the world. Right? Because without you, this wouldn't have happened. But in the case of Chad Ibra Denara, it would have happened regardless. It would have happened without you doing anything at all. Okay, so you're not responsible for extra violations. The only thing you're responsible for in a case of Chad Ibra Denara is that you're harming your fellow Jew by assisting him or her in the violation of a prohibition, regardless of the fact that he or she could have done it they could have done it on their own. You are still harming them. So now to come to explain the shach. In a case in which the person could have done it anyway, and the person is doing it b'mezid, and the person is violating b'mezid, then there's nothing to worry about at all. Because the person is doing it b'mezid, so you don't have to worry about the interpersonal violation. And they could have done it on their own, so you don't have to worry about creating more isurim, more violations of prohibitions in the world. I think that is the explanation of the shach. And there are some further issues. We didn't get to reintroduce the complication of the insurance agent, but for those who are interested, that source 15 and 16 takes up that topic. But the bottom line is, from what we did so far, basically, if it's Chad Ibra Denara, if the person would have access to the care that you're providing, that you're funding, even without you, then there's a lot more room to be lenient. The shach would say that if the person's not Jewish, or they're doing it intentionally, then there's no worries, no prohibition. There are other heterim as well, but things are much more serious if the person would not have been able to do that. Let's say they couldn't have afforded this care, then it's a much bigger issue, and then you really do have to get involved in the source 15 and 16 issue of indirect facilitation. Thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi Siegel. We're going to take a 2-minute break. We're running a little bit late on time. A 2-minute break, and then Dr. Apfel.